welcome to the 100,000th episode of the Nerdstravaganza podcast, where every week we dispense a healthy dose of intellectual chicken soup. I'm Tom.
I'm Eric.
And I'm Brian.
And today, as Eric continues on his road to recovery from some variety of plague he recently contracted, we will discuss how best to spend a sick day, assuming that you can actually move and are not completely bedridden and out of it. But first, we'll inoculate ourselves against a sense of purposelessness with our weekly Geekly Weekly update. Eric, we've missed you. You've been out sick, and you are kind of the motivation for tonight's episode. Why don't you go first in between your fits of coughing and hacking? What have you been up to?
Yeah, I've prepared myself for this episode because it's pretty much the first time in 3 weeks that I can even talk clearly. So I have like Halls and tea handy because I'm going to be hacking. I'm going to be my absolute quickest on the mute button anytime I feel a hacking fit coming on. I've been horribly sick. I guess just to give the audience an idea of what I've been dealing with, I got a really nasty upper respiratory or bacterial infection that did not clear up easily. I'm on my second run of antibiotics and at this point a ton of medications and steroids. And it's not pleasant, but it has given me a lot of time to do pretty much whatever the heck I want. So I'll get into that more, I think, during the episode. I don't want to spill too much. I've played some games. I've made it to the movies. We'll discuss the details once we get into the meat of the episode.
Okay, cool. I am looking forward to that, and as well looking forward to you being fully recovered, and I'm sure I speak for Brian as well when I say that. And speaking of you, Brian, what have you been up to?
I was finally able to put to rest a in no way as serious, but apparently just as long-lasting problem as Eric's illness. I'm sure you're both aware of my Relic Knight Kickstarter problems. I'm even hesitant to call them problems. Drama with the extra pledge they sent me.
Yes.
And how nice one person was and what a rude cock the next person was. And just back and forth. I'm only mentioning it because I do like to share positive customer service experiences. I finally got a definitive answer from somebody at Cool Mini or Not, which is the distributor for the game. And they sent me a FedEx shipping label and asked me to return it at my earliest convenience. And I sent it off to them. And that was the end of that. Today, however, I guess just because different people were involved at different stages, Soda Pop Miniatures sent me an email. And I love companies like this, not because they said, hey, it's okay if you keep your junk, but because his email was, keep it, dude. You can give it to a friend to play with. You can do a second color scheme. Knock yourself out, man. Have fun with this stuff. And it was all about, like, we're happy you have our product. We hope you enjoy it. You know, share it if you don't want to do it yourself. It was just awesome. I was really happy that the company in charge of the game is really that enthusiastic about it.
That is pretty cool.
And I actually wrote him a letter back. I know no one will care. He might get like a gold star or something like that on his next review for it. But I told him exactly that. I was like, you know, the other guys were actually kind of jerks. They made me feel like I was trying to steal from them by asking where I should send it. And you guys were just, you know, he actually said, you know, alternate color scheme. He suggested I paint my second army a different color. And he actually said, share it with friends. And like, that's awesome. I love that.
Yeah, that's a really great way to handle an overshipment of product to a customer, or I guess in this case, a pledger, because you're not technically a customer when you kickstart something. That is cool.
It's cool because, and I wonder if it's a sign of the times kind of thing, and this is maybe it's not so cool that we actually have to like make mention now when customer service is actually good, when I think it used to be the other way around.
Gone is the age when over-the-top customer service was the default, right?
I'm not even exaggerating. I kind of hate to name names because I don't wish them any ill will or anything, but Cool Mini or Not, like, really made me feel like a thief. Like, well, I hope you understand that that's a mistake, and we expect you to return that. Yeah, that's why I sent the email, to ask where to return it, man. I wasn't going to ask to keep it or anything like that. I didn't expect to keep it. Just asking where you want it. Really short, really terse with me. as someone asking where to return it, I didn't like that at all. So I'm glad things ended on a positive note. I can feel better about playing that game again now.
Yeah, me too. Word of advice to anybody in a customer service capacity, be nice. Even if you're just being nice professionally, it goes a long way. It builds positive vibes. It makes people feel good about your brand and your products.
And word to consumers, customers, if you can, buy something from Soda Pop Minis. They're kind of awesome.
Yay.
Secondly, I know Tom was involved in this game. I don't know if Eric ever played it or not. You remember Resistance? Kind of. We played it at a game night a couple of times, and I don't know. It was like, all right, but I wasn't too big on it or anything. Well, I found out, apparently, skinning something in King Arthur and Knights of the Round Table makes anything better, because we played Avalon at last week's game night at Adventure Game Store, and it was a blast. It's basically Resistance with knights, but it was so much more fun.
Cool. I could see that being more enjoyable. You basically put a cool medieval spin on it, and now it goes from a sci-fi, dystopian sci-fi setting to...
The mechanics are almost the exact same, but they have different roles. So instead of being like an agent, one of you is actually Merlin. And one of you can actually be Percival. He's like an optional character. One of you can be Modred. I don't know. Like, just that makes things more fun for me.
Cool, man. Well, I'm glad you found an enjoyable game in that. So will that be a regular fixture at our game nights from now on, you think?
I am hoping. I'm going to encourage that.
Excellent. Anything else?
That's it.
Okay, that brings it to me. Mine's fairly short and sweet. In what I can only describe as just a fit of masochism, over the past couple weeks, I have been watching all of the Transformers movies on streaming at home in preparation to go see Transformers: Age of Extinction. And I was going in just loaded with contempt after suffering through those previous three movies, ready to just crap all over this. And I came away actually shocked that I didn't hate it. And I was kind of wondering what would happen next at the end of the movie. And I never thought that was going to happen. I actually just wanted to watch a series of bad movies, and the last one ended up being not as bad a movie as the previous three. So my mind, I won't say it was blown, but was certainly thrown for a loop. I was expecting it to be awful, and it was merely okay.
That's kind of a step up. I can't bring myself to even see it still. I can't. Maybe if it's on like HBO Go at some point or something like that.
It's worth watching for free on HBO if you have a subscription. I will say Marky Mark being in it helped a lot, I think. The other sort of scrawny kid that was in the other movies, he'd worn out his welcome. And I've grown to like Marky Mark over the years. Sorry, Mark Wahlberg over the years, as he has become a serious actor. And
Nah, screw that, Marky Mark.
Well, he was a highlight of the movie. Yeah, he did a good job. Yeah, overall, just solid. So I'd say if you want a decent Transformers movie, for the moment, you can't do any better than this one.
So let me ask you this, and I kind of already can guess the answer, but since you decided to watch all of them leading up to this one, is it dependent in any way on watching the other ones?
No. They basically just like wiped the slate clean. Like, they reference events in the third one, which you can basically just infer from the reference happened, and that's it. You don't need to go watch any of the previous movies.
Good, because I don't want to.
Don't. Go see this standalone. And if that piques your curiosity about what happened in the previous movies, ignore your curiosity and don't go watch them. That's my recommendation. It's not worth it.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Because I got fooled on the first one. I discussed this with people recently, and they said, like, the only thing they remember about going to see the first one was the look on my face after the movie. how livid I was. I was just furious. Like, and the sad part is, I was the most excited of the bunch going to see this film. I was like, this is going to be great. I've never been so let down by a movie in my life. Like, it's the epitome of being let down. And then I decided not to go see the second one. I ended up watching half of it at home and then just turned it off. I was like, this is terrible also. I didn't watch the third one at all, and I haven't seen the new one because it's like, how many times are you going to fool me?
Well, I'll just say, I guess in closing, that this movie wasn't, and this is what I was really searching for in my description, it wasn't offensive. They didn't set out to offend you and make you regret giving them your money to see the film. It gone were most of the offensive stereotypes, the really childish antics. There's no farting or penis jokes or urinating on things. Like, it was a more serious movie, and I think it benefited greatly from taking a more serious stance. And maybe not the best constructed movie, but I'm hardly a film critic. I would say if you haven't seen one or if you want to give the series another chance, now's the time. Speaking of series, though, I went and saw a very worthy sequel, what I thought was a really top-notch movie, and speaking kind of tangentially of Marky Mark, I went and saw Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, which was a sequel to Rise of the Planet of the Apes, which had nothing to do with the Marky Mark early 2000s Planet of the Apes, which was terrible. And that movie is really good. I cannot give it a solid enough recommendation. I give it like an 11 banana ranking. It was great.
Yeah, I saw it as well. It is one of the few things I actually dragged myself out of the house during the day to go see. And I was nothing but pleased with it. And I loved it. And I actually had the privilege of having a very close friend who worked on the film directly. So I followed along his Facebook updates and, you know, tried to chat with him whenever possible about it. So I do want to give a big kudos to Ryan Stafford, who is part of the visual effects department. And, I mean, they did an awesome job. It was fantastic.
Yeah, the movie was really well done. Rubber masks were really the only effects available when the first series of movies were made. Rubber masks and crappy CG were available when the Marky Mark one was made, and they went with rubber masks, I think, to somewhat disastrous effect. But now we've reached a point where CG can really deliver a top-notch experience if done right, and they do it right in this movie. I will say that without any qualification.
They really do. And we discussed this, the person I went to see the film with and I discussed the fact that, like, the first film, when I watched the very first Planet of the Apes, I still love the masks and the makeup that were done in that film. To me, they're still done really well. They still hold up. And maybe it was because I associate that look with the movie. But the follow-ups to those movies, and again, the original follow-ups, it's like they had a far smaller budget. And I think the masks kind of just transitioned into, like, these pullovers where everything was just attached to, like, a stocking. So when they moved their face, things kind of moved, but they weren't, like, glued directly on. So it looked weird. And so I love the first film. I didn't hate any of the ones after that. They're still part of it, and I still love them. I absolutely hated the Tim Burton piece of garbage. But I couldn't be happier with these last two films. They've been spectacular.
Agreed. So a lukewarm recommendation for Transformers, a solid recommendation on Planet of the Apes. And to round out my update, I will also mention that I started back playing World of Warcraft. Just dipped a toe in for kicks. And I've been enjoying it. I'm playing it here and there. It doesn't really suck me in too much. And my character's level 81 or something like that. And I'm trying to get him to the new current level cap of 90. And there's an expansion launching later this year. We'll see if I want to keep playing by then. World of Warcraft, it is what it is. I don't recommend it or not recommend it. Play it if you think it's for you, I guess. And I think, I know in fact, that wraps up my update. So let's get back to kind of your update, Eric, your report from the sick bed, and motivate tonight's discussion. You've been sick, but you've been that, I guess, not as bad kind of sick. You're not incapacitated, but you feel like crap.
It's like, it's basically like if you had an endless head cold that just persisted and persisted and persisted, and the cough just kept getting worse and worse. It was that kind of feeling. The only thing that really incapacitated me was the fact that I get these, and I still get them, but not nearly as prevalent, these coughing fits where I just can't stop coughing and basically just have to let it run its course. And during that point, I'm non-functional, and I can't look at anything. I'm just hacking. That actually brings me to the first point, which was during that first week, and I mentioned this on the very last episode I had been on, I've been playing a ton of Mario Kart 8. And I was like, oh, I'm going to have the opportunity to, like, unlock everything and play online all I want. I played two games, and halfway through my second game online, I had a coughing fit and basically threw the controller at the ground unwillingly. Just in the fit, the controller just kind of slammed to the ground. So I took a break from video games. I said, okay, that's probably not going to work. So what I did, which is what I think everyone does at this point, and I'll admit it's a bit cliche, is it pretty much set the stage for a dozen Netflix marathons. And the one that I think I spent the most time on, and when I really think about how much I've watched, considering it's only been about 3 weeks of being sick, is, and this makes me, I guess, kind of a bad geek, and now I've redeemed myself, is Doctor Who. I had only ever watched old school Doctor Who, and then I've watched the very first Eccleston season, and then I started watching like two or three episodes into season two, and I just gave up. I don't remember why I gave up. I didn't hate the show. I actually thought, like, I liked the way they rebooted it for the most part. It didn't feel like the old ones to me, but I was happy that the show existed again. But I gave up, and I never couldn't remember why I didn't go back to it. Now, if my brother is listening to this, because I know he does, he's going to hate me for this, because he absolutely hates any of the new Doctor Who stuff. He liked the old stuff as a kid. He can't stand any of the new stuff. He doesn't see the appeal at all. I was kind of on the fence. Like, I like it. I like it a lot, actually. I think some of the fan culture is a little extreme, but being a nerd and a geek, I don't really care that the fan culture is extreme. That's never bothered me, because, I mean, I've taken it too extreme with other stuff, so everyone's got something they like.
Right, everybody has their little fandom they live in or something, right?
Literally watched from season two to all of season seven. I'm caught up.
Okay, cool. So that's a perfect example of what we're talking about in terms of diversions to sort of occupy your mind when you're sick. When you're ill to the point where you're not incapacitated, but you want to get your mind off the symptoms, you've got to find that thing that will get your mind off of it without kind of exacerbating the symptoms by requiring that you exert yourself in some way or that you focus. And I'm kind of with you. I tend to do better with passive entertainment. I can do some video gaming if it's not intense and it's something I can just stop, and something that doesn't require me holding a controller that I might drop during fit of coughing.
Yeah, because I literally threw the thing, and you know, the one thing about the Wii U is the controller's kind of important.
Yeah, it's kind of the system in that case. So
right, exactly. And I mean, I threw it hard. I was worried afterwards, so I was like, yeah, that's why I put it down. I was like, okay, I'll take a break.
But you found Modern Who, and you're caught up, and that's great. That's fantastic. So something good has come out of this illness.
Yeah, and I mean, here's where Jordan's going to kill me. I love it. I absolutely love it. I can't wait for the new season. And to be honest, now that I've seen the trailer for the new season, which looks a little darker, and, you know, the Doctor's a little older, you know, the Capaldi Doctor's, so, you know, he's definitely an older actor. It looks and feels more like the classics when I look at that trailer.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I know there's been some speculation that it's not going to have the following it has had in the past because women, and maybe some men as well, can no longer just completely swoon over the Doctor because he's not a young hunk anymore. But I think we need a change up from that. So I'm glad that they went in a new direction with the actor.
See, I'm hoping this one pays off for me.
How so?
Well, the past three Doctors have consisted of Eccleston's Doctor wasn't very nerdy at all. He was kind of just like, he was kind of just a guy. And I think that was actually, like, when people look at those, I actually liked him as the Doctor.
Yes.
But some people don't. For that very reason, that he wasn't quirky. And he wasn't quirky very much at all. His acting was a little quirky, but visually he wasn't quirky at all. So Tennant introduced the first Doctor that I think everyone had an absolute crush on. And to me, he's actually my favorite of the Doctors, although his episodes are not my favorite episodes. Matt Smith also, you know, there are a lot of girls who think Matt Smith is adorable, and he was definitely the quirkier dresser, and that brought all these kids wearing bow ties around. And again, cute guy, and I actually like his episodes the best. Even though I liked Tennant better as an actor as the Doctor, I liked Matt Smith's episodes, the writing in the episodes, the best. But this brings me to my point, which is Capaldi is older, and he's got salt and pepper hair. This could be great for me. Because visually, yeah, like, this is the Doctor that looks the most like me. I was like, all right, sweet. Like, if this gets, you know, if girls are into him, That might help me out.
Yeah, this will be an interesting test for herd mentality in the human race. If the older, quote-unquote, refined gentleman with salt and pepper hair becomes the new hot, then we'll know that people are truly herd animals. If an older gentleman just doesn't have the appeal as a young, quirky hunk, then we'll know that it all just comes down to putting a good-looking person in the role.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm looking forward to seeing what this turns into. I'm just really curious.
Me too.
And I wonder how much of it has to do with, like, age, because for those people who started following, let's say, with Eccleston, it's been, what, like, 7 or 8 years.
Yeah.
So if those people started watching at 20, they're now pushing their, you know, starting to push their 30s, and maybe they're into the salt and pepper guy.
Could be. Eric, this could be a new golden age for you. You'll emerge. Think of this illness you're going through as your regeneration phase, and you will emerge as a lady-killing doctor at the end of this.
Right, exactly. And the bonus of that is, if my sense of smell has been permanently damaged by this, that expands my base of dating, because I don't have to worry if the girl smells awful.
Oh, that's terrible.
Right. It's that Pepe Le Pew feature, like in the cartoons, where, like, you know, when they can't smell anymore, all of a sudden Pepe Le Pew, when he falls in paint and he looks all muscular, is kind of a hunk.
Yes, nice. So that may be a blessing as well for you. Brian, you've been awfully quiet. What are your thoughts on sort of a passive activity like watching a TV series when you're sick, and Doctor Who in particular?
It's funny. Everything comes back to the British. Or maybe it's not funny. Maybe it's just the way things are. But I remember a couple of years ago, right about Christmas time, I had a pretty bad cold, sickness, whatever. I don't know. I took some Tylenol and it went away. But I watched every episode of Battlestar Galactica, like the original series. Like, it was on Sci-Fi. It wasn't the new stuff, but just back to back to back. It was a pretty interesting experience. I love that series normally, but it's so much better when you're high on meds.
Yes, I can see the appeal being greatly enhanced when you're under the calming effect of medication.
You know, now that you brought up the British thing, it's kind of creepy in my head, because even as a kid, pretty much the only cartoons that were on during the day, if you were stuck home sick, were all like the BBC cartoons. It was, you know, the Danger Mouse and Count Duckula on daytime Nickelodeon. I mean, after you suffered through Pinwheel.
Oh, my. Oh, why did you bring Pinwheel up? That's exactly what came to mind as we got into this discussion.
Yeah. I think everyone experienced the I'm homesick, Pinwheel is on, that song's going to be stuck in my head for all eternity now.
I actually went the other way when I was a young one. And instead of watching cartoons all day, I used to watch game shows with my grandma. And black and white television, like Green Acres and Petticoat Junction and Mr. Ed all day.
I do remember watching Mr. Ed. And I definitely remember catching game shows, because I mean, you had three choices when we were younger. I mean, they weren't all the channels that we have now. And really, your choices were whatever was on Nickelodeon, if you wanted to watch anything that was remotely childish, game shows, or soap operas, which I definitely wasn't going to watch.
I can't stop thinking about Pinwheel. Like, I think to this day, one of the reasons I don't go straight to TV is because I did get sick quite a lot when I was a kid. I was prone to ear infections and that sort of thing. And I hated being home alone, and I hated being home alone with... There was something just creepy about this television show, Pinwheel. And for people that don't know, it came on what, Nickelodeon?
Yeah, it was on Nickelodeon. And it's basically like a variety show for kids, but without any of the fun. Like, it didn't have the Sesame Street or the Electric Company kind of pizzazz to it. It just literally was like videos of kids doing stuff, or like a guy like, here's how I am a fireman. Okay, here's how you're a fireman.
Yeah, and it had a cast of like really creepy like creatures that weren't appealing in the least. And it had that, I didn't understand at the time, but it had the aspect of being filmed on a set. And it came through very clearly, and that seemed so sterile and empty to me that it freaked me out, man. It freaked me out almost as badly as those weird moop, 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 or whatever those weird creatures were that would come on Sesame Street and land in the UFO.
Oh, I loved those things.
I think the theme song did it for me, that monotonous droning repetition.
Pinwheel spinning around?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ugh. So... You've got me thinking, though, now, like, what do I do when I'm sick to the point where I can't work? I try to go with something interactive, not necessarily passive. because it's really weird. I end up usually settling into just watching a movie or something, but I try my best to make the most of my sick time. But I often find that if I try to play a video game, if it presents even the slightest challenge or doesn't let me just kind of zone out and get into the gaming zone, I just don't have the stomach for it. Like, I just get easily disgusted, and suddenly I'm much more aware of my symptoms, and I've made things worse by trying to get my mind off the illness.
And, you know, I recall that being 10 times worse when I was a kid, because if NES was your only option, let's be perfectly frank here. As much as I absolutely love, I mean, a ton of NES games, and I still have my NES, and I still have a stockpile of, you know, the cartridges, 90% of those games are frustrating as hell.
Yes.
There was no casual gaming.
I am not kidding. You have to take me at my word, because I was the only one there for this. I was home one time sick from school during the NES era, and I think I was playing, like, Rambo, that video game, and I was just getting my ass handed to me, and I was, like, in that weepy, like, sick kid kind of voice, like, come on, I'm sick, like, pleading with the game, like, help me out here, throw me a bone, you're supposed to make me feel better, not worse, by frustrating me.
Oh, yeah, and I totally get that. Actually, my moment came with Akari Warriors, so I guess similar kind of game. The problem with Akari Warriors was you could get really far in that game.
Get stuck.
And get stuck, and then it was, and you didn't even have the heart to reset your system or turn it off. You would just watch that thing glitch for like an hour, like going, "No, I'm so damn far. I am not turning this off," even though you know for a fact there's nothing to be done.
Right, you couldn't scroll the screen back, and you had walked up through some pipes to the point where you couldn't move, and they were it was an impenetrable barrier, and you were just stuck, and you couldn't accept it. And being sick and not being able to accept something like that was just awful.
It was the worst. I won't even get into, like, Ninja Gaiden and the frustration levels there.
That's what I'm saying. Like, Mario Kart seems like the perfect game to play while you're sick, because it's challenging, sure, but it's a fun kind of challenging. And if you lose, you just try again. It's got that nice cartoony, like, soft feel to it. But I never really put two and two together and considered that my very expensive Nintendo gamepad might become a projectile should I be wrecked by coughing.
I didn't expect it either until it actually happened, and that's when I was like, and we're done here.
Okay, what about reading? Do you guys, if your sinuses were stopped up, I know to even focus your eyes on something is no picnic. Anybody ever go to the written word for some relief from their symptoms?
I try to, but it's in short bursts, because there are two problems, and you named the first one, which is when you have sinus pressure, your eyes just refuse to focus on anything for more than 10 seconds. The other one is that I tend to do most of my reading kind of laying down in bed, kind of, you know, mostly reclined. And I couldn't for at least a week be in that position without hacking my brains out. I had to sleep pretty much sitting straight up. So reading was near impossible.
I've never been able to read if I was uncomfortable. It's like such a joy to me to read that I can't be in the least bit uncomfortable.
I don't absorb the words. I try. I have tried. I was like, well, I've got time to read. Let me do that. You know, I don't want really audio stimulus, or I don't want any video. Let me just read. It's too active an activity for me to do. The whole reason I'm typically homesick from work, let's say, is because I can't concentrate. I don't have it in me to concentrate. And my job, it's not physical. It requires my concentration and my being active and present in the moment, however. And with a head all stopped up, I can't do anything that kind of engages my mind. I think that I may have stumbled on the ultimate form of passive entertainment, though, when I'm sick. And I don't know why I never thought of this. I'm going to have to try it next time I get sick. I could just listen to podcasts all day, right? You just close your eyes, lay in bed, and let somebody else do the work.
Yeah, I did do that for a little bit. There was a short time where I was like, I'm going to go ahead and do podcasts. The problem with that became just, it's like the cabin fever got worse when I was literally just sitting there listening.
So you needed to engage your other senses after all?
To an extent. Like, I guess, you know, the idea is to get your mind completely off it. And when I was sitting there with my eyes closed, just listening, my mind was definitely still focused on the pain in my chest and the pressure in my head.
That's too bad. So I might have to rethink a pure audio form of escape. Brian, what do you think? Could you kind of put yourself in a comfortable position and just listen?
Probably. I don't think it's much different than television. I can roll your back to the TV and still listen to just it. So I could probably do the same thing.
You know, I wondered how much of it, because Doctor Who was my go-to television, I wonder how much of it was the fact that the podcasts that I listen to tend to be informative, whereas with Doctor Who, it was pure, like, storytelling, and I think the story actually kind of engaged me enough to pull me out of it, as opposed to, like, just trying to absorb knowledge.
That's a good point, and it gets me thinking about another, maybe, alternative, a nice middle ground between reading and a podcast. Why not an audiobook?
I didn't try that.
It would seem on the surface to be soothing, right? Everybody liked to be read a story when they were a kid, especially when they were sick. Isn't that the case?
I wonder if I would zone out so much that I would just, like, have to go back and listen to certain parts over and over again.
I think that's okay. You have time. Plenty of time.
If it's something I'd probably already read, it'd probably be ideal. I don't think I'd start some new material that way.
Because of the inability to concentrate?
Yeah, I think, like, when I finally finished it, I would feel like there were just whole chunks missing in my head.
Yeah, that's the thing. Even with reading for pleasure, it's still an absorption of knowledge more so than watching TV is. Brian, where do you come down on this? I know you're you have a definite opinion being a man of the written word yourself.
I'm weird about that. I think audiobooks come in, like, one step above the movie remake.
Ouch. Now, it is a full treatment of the source text, though. Nothing is left out.
Kind of. I mean, the experience is reading it, though. And I don't think you can possibly listen to someone else read something without having their emotions inflected.
Yeah, I agree, which is why I think I have, like, a few criteria that come in when I do decide I'm finally going to actually listen to an audiobook. One is, first of all, I tend to reserve audiobook listening for long car rides. If I am driving up to visit family in the Carolinas or something like that, that's when I will say, okay, maybe I'll do an audiobook because it's like an 11-hour drive. And, you know, listening to music while, you know, I like it, it does, after a while, it's not engaging enough while you're bored out of your mind driving. The other one is, and this is, I think, more to your point, Brian, was I look at who the narrator is. If it's the actual author, great. That's the ideal. The alternative is hopefully somebody that I already know as a narrator or an author who I think can do a good job with the material that they have. An example of that would be, even though I've read it a million times and we keep going back to it and Tom hasn't, is Hitchhiker's Guide. The Stephen Fry narration is fantastic on the audiobook. It really is.
What do you think, Brian? Are you sold next time you're sick?
I could give it a shot, but my hopes aren't high.
I don't know if we're going to be able to sell Brian on this necessarily. Well, let me ask you this, Brian. Last time you were sick, what did you do, or do you even recall?
I think it was just a television marathon. I turned, you know, BBC on or SIFI on and try to get as much better rest as possible.
Last time I was sick, I think I took my first crack at the Clone Wars. It's not to do with my current almost complete trek through that god-awful series, but I believe I actually did make an attempt at it. And I just couldn't deal with all the objectionable stuff in addition to being ill. So watching something that's going to offend you, watching a Transformers movie, say, at least the first three, is probably not a good move when you're ill. Let me ask you this, Eric. You did mention this, and this isn't something I would have thought to do as a person who's sick. And to remind the audience, we're talking about kind of just persistent, annoying symptoms here, not bedridden and dying necessarily. I would not have thought to go sit in the cool comfort of a movie theater during the day with a low crowd and watch a movie, and you did that.
Yeah, I did it twice, actually. I didn't do it in that first, like, week and a half when I was really dying. But when I started to feel a little better and the coughing fits were a little bit more isolated, I did. And again, one of the movies I saw was Rise of the Planet of the Apes, which was fantastic. And the other was How to Train Your Dragon 2. I loved the first one. And admittedly, I did not see the first one in the theater. And when I remember seeing the trailer, I thought it was going to be kind of childish and hokey. And in a small way, it is. But it was way better than I thought it was going to be, the first one. And I ended up really loving it. I was even amazed, and I think we're all past spoilers at this point, and how adult the ending was. I mean, the fact that the lead character of a children's animated movie has his leg severed is kind of extreme for a kid's movie.
Yeah, I watched the first one recently, too, in preparation for watching the second one in theaters, and surprisingly good. So does your sickness have any bearing on the type of movie you think you might go see, or did that just happen to be what was playing while you were in the throes of this illness?
It was convenient because it is exactly the kind of thing I would watch when I was sick, and the fact that it was in theaters and I wanted to see it was a bonus. So it kind of just played out really well for me, because that's the kind of just like fun, rompy kind of movie I would want to see when I'm sick, where I don't have to like invest too much thought into anything. That said, though, I loved it. I actually like it better than the first one.
Cool. I'll have to go check it out. I don't plan on getting sick anytime soon, so I may just go check it out for general use. Brian, would you yourself embark on a movie theater trip while ill? I know you are a little not really in love with the idea of being in a theater with other people a lot of the times.
No, I probably wouldn't. I don't think being around other people is the best thing for a cold, so I'd probably avoid that.
To be socially responsible, let's add to the list that you are past the contagious stage. So, you know, you're just dealing with residual symptoms that persist, and you are no longer a threat to the public.
Well, I see the public as a threat to my health most of the time anyway, so weakened defenses and all that.
Oh, right, and then you're getting, like, Ebola coughed on you or something, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Good point. Good point.
You know, the only one I ever feel really any kind of major responsibility about, like, not leaving my house if I'm really in the throes of is the flu. You know, colds are colds, and I work in a school where I'm exposed to these things all the time, you know, bacteria and viruses and the basics. The flu is different, though, because, I mean, the flu kills people from time to time, so I'm always a little bit more hesitant, especially when I work with kids. I don't want to give them all the flu. That's the only one I'm a little bit more reserved about leaving my house with.
Very society-minded of you, sir, to look out for your fellow man and your little fellow men in training and women. And I guess as a teacher, that is where your mind should go. So, okay, let's do this, guys. I thought of a rapid-fire kind of impromptu game we can play to sort of round this episode out. We've talked about movies. We've talked about books. We've talked about video games. And include in movies also TV shows, so just kind of watching something, let's say. Let's do a rapid-fire game. I'll ask the question, whatever comes to your mind. You don't even need to explain it if you don't want, just because it comes to mind. Let's play a game wherein I go down that list and ask you to name something. If you got a gun to your head and you've got to watch it while sick, it's your only outlet, what's it going to be? So I'll go first, just to set an example. What movie would I watch while ill if I had to watch a movie? I would watch Disney's animated Alice in Wonderland, simply because I watched that movie thousands of times when I was a kid because my mom had it on tape and it was handy. What about you, Eric?
What I would watch now is The Avengers, because I've seen it enough times where I don't need to pay attention to it, and yet I can watch it every time it's on, and it always captivates me. So that would be my movie now. However, if I were to go with your philosophy of the movie that I had on tape that was readily available all the time to watch as a kid, you're going to love this. At least into like my early teen years, was Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves.
Wow. American Robin Hood?
Yeah. I mean, we had it on VHS, and it was always like, literally, it's one of those movies that just for some reason was just always stuck in the VCR. And actually we had like a conversion van as a kid. So we had like the VCR and TV in the back of the van, and that was always in there. And I don't know why. I don't even remember liking it that much as a kid. I just remember watching it over and over again.
You know, I actually didn't hate the movie. I just hated that Robin Hood sounded like he was from Ohio.
Yeah, that's the biggest gripe. Overall, the movie, I mean, I don't know if people remember this, but there was actually two Robin Hood movies released in that same year. The other one was really bad. which I think just made this one a little better. And I always wondered if maybe the studio was like, hey, if we can convince some little studio to release a shitty one, it'll make our movie that much better.
I did not know that there was another one released.
Yeah, in the same year.
We'll have to do that one for Bad Movie Night, maybe, in an upcoming episode. But moving on, Brian, what would you watch while sick or recommend people watch?
Fifth Element.
Really?
You can really enjoy that movie if you watch it, but it's also just really fun to have on in the background. You don't actually need to pay any attention to it. You know, Ruby Rod's not going to confuse you.
You know, that's a great point. That's a cartoon made into a live-action movie if ever there was one, right?
Actually, mine, when it comes to the what I think is the ultimate like cartoon turned into live-action movie that wasn't, I guess that wasn't that, but felt that way, is Dark City. Dark City feels like an anime turned into a live-action movie.
Dark City about the city in space?
Yes.
Yeah, that was good stuff. That was good
and
stuff.
For those who haven't seen it, Tom just told you the whole ending of the movie.
Oh! Major spoiler alert for a 20-year-old movie, so sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so we've made it past the watching stage. Let's get into the reading side of things. If you have to read something while sick, and Brian, we'll let you go first this time, what would you read?
Are we going to go, like, actually read literature, or do comic books count?
Anything, as long as it involves reading.
I'd just grab a comic or something like that. Not even something I'm following. Like, when I was sick, my mom would bring me comics and color forms to, like, make up for it. So, like, whatever superhero was on the shelf that week.
Yeah, good recommendation. That is a lighthearted bit of reading, and who doesn't feel good reading comics? Eric, what do you think? Would you read comics while ill?
Yeah, I was going to go the same route, and I think I'd probably pick up again something I'd already read because I wouldn't want to like mentally invest in something I couldn't pay attention to. I'd probably rewatch or reread, rather, Watchmen, something like that.
Cool. I could easily jump on the bandwagon with you guys and say read some manga or comics, and I might, and I will recommend that. But another suggestion would be if you're like me and you have a couple of magazine subscriptions that come rolling in, I'm talking actual paper magazines because you're old school. I tend to not read those and let them pile up for a few months and then just spend a few hours reading through them. What better time to do that than when you're homesick? Read your magazines that have been piling up.
Actually, I can tell you a better time to do that. That's called the toilet.
Yeah, but I find that my toilet time isn't, what's the word I'm looking for? Expansive enough to really give magazines my full attention. Whereas if you just feel like you're on a toilet 24/7 because you're sick, well, you've got that much more time to read.
It's like Rick is back with us.
Yes, yes. If you feel like you don't just have a dead leg, but your whole body feels like one big dead leg, well, read some magazines. Oh, man. Okay, so moving on to the final category, and this is our last one. You're sick, and the only way you're going to get better is to play a video game. What's it going to be, Eric?
You know, I keep following the trend of going back to things I've already done just so I don't have to dedicate my brain very much. It would probably be... Oh, you guys are going to love this. It'd probably be NHL. Just because you don't have to, it's literally like a 20-minute game and then it's over and you don't have to dedicate your brain to it all that much.
Really? I would think that would be like a very fast-paced, kind of twitchy, you got to be in the moment type of game.
It is, but it's, again, it's like a pick up and play. Like, you know what I mean? I wouldn't play anything that had any kind of storyline or like where I would have to repeatedly save on a regular basis, anything like that. I would want something that I could literally pick up and play. And Mario Kart falls into that category of pick up and play. But in the case of NHL, I can use my 360 controller, and if I throw it, it wouldn't be the first time.
Okay, a fair point. And you've thrown that in anger, I assume.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That was definitely Halo's fault.
Yeah, I'm glad I'm not alone in that. I always feel like a maniac when I'm the one who throws my controller. But I good to know that I'm not the only person who is prone to having a controller slip out of their hands during a moment of gaming excitement, let's say.
I miss the 16-bit days, man. You could do anything to those controllers.
They were hardy.
Yeah, you couldn't break an NES controller if you tried. But most of the time I do the, like, about to throw and then restrain myself and then like kind of reel it back in. Like, so my hand goes up with the controller, like ready for a throw, and then it comes back like, okay, you don't want to break your shit.
Yeah, I'm able to exercise a lot more constraint now than in the past, but
there's nothing. I have done a couple unintentional, you know, the unintentional throw is the one where, like, you kind of, like, you know, when something happens, like, especially in a game like Halo, where you're playing against other people and you're like, there's no way that guy killed me before I killed him. So you kind of just toss your hands in the air, like, what the hell? I have done that, and the controller has slipped out of my hand and just went, like, spinning through the room.
That's almost accidental. You're, like, guffawing and using your hands as you're wont to do, and, well, the controller just suffers. It wasn't intentional. It's nobody's fault. Well, I think I might be more prone to throwing a controller while sick, which is why I think I need to play something that is ultra low stakes. And for me, I was going to suggest Borderlands, because it's kind of just a fetch questy good time. But the first person shooting can be a little much to take when you're ill. So I will instead suggest like an MMO play, and this ties nicely into last week's episode, which was all about this. Just play an MMORPG and do some mindless like hunting and gathering with minimal stakes, I guess.
Well, if you're going to do that, you could just play like Animal Crossing.
Something like that. Exactly. Okay. Yeah. Let's just say any game where it's just a plodding game of rinse and repeat activities. And Animal Crossing is an ideal example of that. What about you, Brian? You got to play something. What's it going to be?
I'd probably go with an MMO, too. I haven't done it in a while, but I used to play EverQuest and Warcraft just nonstop. I would just, like, plop up against the desk and let my pet kill shit.
I actually do remember, Brian, during the EverQuest days, when you had your computer set up, on your TV, coming over your house when you weren't feeling too great, and you were just like propped up against the arm of the sofa, like I think you were our healer, and you were just like sitting there like, let me know when you need me to heal.
I was the cleric. We were in like the lower sewers of Khazad Thul, and I kept getting compliments, dude, best healer. What? You're great. All you do is sit there. You don't fight like other idiot clerics.
Right. Whenever somebody would ask for a heal, you would just be like, okay, hit the button. Like a vending machine dispensing heals.
But everybody hated that because it was so boring. But I was out of my head, so I didn't mind at all.
Perfect. So yeah, I think the bottom line is something a little more low-key to let the patient relax, whatever that means to the patient. I don't think any doctor would advise strenuous or stressful activity while sick. And I think that extends to entertainment and definitely to video games, which can be so mentally taxing. Well, okay. Apart from wishing you a speedy recovery, Eric, I think we've kind of come up with some suggestions for how to spend your sick time and spent an unpredicted amount of time talking about Doctor Who. I have to say you have piqued my interest in that series again. Anything else you guys want to talk about before we wrap it? Okay, that makes things easy. It is then time for us to wrap it. I will rattle off my usual list of promotions. Check us out on iTunes. Check us out on Stitcher. Rate us favorably. We will love you for it.
Like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram. Plus one us on Google. And don't forget to join the Nerdstravaganza HQ on Facebook.
Check out our website at nerdstravaganza.com or drop us a line. Email us at nerdstravaganza@gmail.com.
And until next time, folks, make sure you drink plenty of water, get plenty of rest, and take all sorts of scientifically unproven homeopathic remedies, because they make you feel better where it counts the most, in your mind.